Good evening, this is Mark Lynch, and this is Inquiry. My guest tonight is Tory Gates. He's an award-winning writer, radio broadcaster, hosting and producing music, talk, and sports program. And we're here talking about his latest book, Searching for Roy Buchanan. Tory, welcome to the show. It's a pleasure to talk to you.
Well, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
I want to talk first about Searching for Roy Buchanan. How would you summarize what goes on in this book? Because it's a strange book. It's actually a musical education, which is what I want to talk to you about.
Well, it is one of those things that is very hard to explain, but I had somebody say to me a few years ago, give me the elevator pitch. And I basically say, well, it's the first of a young adult fiction series. It is about a Japanese teenager named Aki who has the gift of time travel but does not know how to use it. She and her brothers have a run-in with a strange old retired blues musician, and we're off.
Now, talk to me about writing young adult fiction, because this is your fourth book.
Well, it is my fourth.
I want to talk to you about how you went down that road. How long have you been writing these?
Well, Searching for Roy Buchanan is not my first stab at writing a full work.
No, it's your fourth, right?
Well, it is my fourth that is published, yes, but that book actually was written in 2007.
Huh.
And I had spent most of my writing career in broadcasting, writing everything from commercial and PSA copy to news stories, that sort of thing. I wrote songs for a number of years for my old band, and just because I like to do them. But I had made an attempt back in the early 90s at a sci-fi novel and mapped out this whole grandiose plan. And basically, I had a publisher tell me, sort of, and I had a close friend tell me a similar thing was, well, it's a great idea, but it reads like Star Trek fan fiction. And I was like, there goes, and
twist
I land
the,
right
twist
on
the
my
knife.
Ego.
Twist the knife. Okay.
Yeah. But no, it was a good thing.
So was that your first book, Parasite Girls, that you ended up self-publishing?
No, that was a completely different thing. That book is still somewhere in one of my file cabinets. I don't know that I'm ever going to go back to it because it had some good ideas, but it was one of those things where I just left it alone. And for a number of years, things happened. Anyway, in 2007, I had these strange ideas that all just sort of came together and twisted themselves up in one of those knots that you cannot untie. And it had to do with kind of the influences of the moment. Now, I've always been a music fan all my life. I've been a blues fan for so much of it. It's just
And that comes as no surprise reading this book.
Yeah. Well, that was the one music that has always hit me, that has always really struck me. But
when you talked about your band, do you play the blues in your band?
Well, we're not a band any longer, actually.
But when we were?
We were a new age rock band.
No.
The name was Altira, and it was an amalgam of words meaning alternate levels of light. There were six of us, seven at one point, and all of us had completely different musical influences. We all had completely different ideas about what music should be like. So most of us wrote songs separately, and then we would bring them to the band, and then we would be like, oh, we can do that, or we can do that. And so it was just we were together about from 2006 to 2010 in various forms. We played a few festivals. We played a few club shows. Never really made any money at it. We never recorded, but I will say we had an awful lot of fun.
That's what matters.
Yeah, and so
did you do covers?
We did a few. We tried very hard to stay within our own music to just sort of be original, but we would do occasional things if it just took us, and it was a good time. The band broke up, and I stayed together with the bass player, Jennifer Shearer. We changed our name to the Dharma Fools, and we had various people in and out of the band, and we mostly just got together to write songs. We did do a few things, but we finally called it quits in, I think, 2018. And we did get back together at the beginning of this year, sort of a form of the band for a friend of ours who had passed away. And it was fun, but we were just kind of like, you know what, we're all going our own ways. And I had so much going on in my career, but also in this writing. The writing really took charge of me in 2007.
Now, I want to go slow over this. Because sure. whenever I interview an artist, whether it's a writing artist or a visual artist or whatever, I'm always interested in how this impulse starts. Does this writing come out of writing the songs for the band, or were you always writing like back to high school? Were you doing bad poetry or whatever?
Well, my first attempt at writing a short story is probably what passed me through freshman English.
Ooh.
I had written. I was a very depressed, anxious, messed up kid throughout my adolescence. No different than what anyone else went through. I will say that. And I was a very undisciplined student. I was really about a year behind most of my peers, and I didn't know that. And I had this rather odd freshman English teacher, and he had heard about this short story that I had written, and I had passed it around to some of my peers, and much to my surprise, they all thought, hey, this is pretty good, you know, and he wanted to read it. And I thought, well, okay, so I finished it off. I'd only written a few pages. I mean, I think the whole thing was probably 20 pages long. And it was an incredibly bloody, violent Western. And today, if I tried to submit that in high school, I would be up before my principal and a psychiatrist. But I handed it in to him. I really didn't think he'd like it. I just kind of thought, oh, he's probably going to rip this apart. But he got it back to me a short time later. He says, this is very good. You know, I appreciate it. And
wow.
I think he gave me extra credit for it because that's how I passed into 10th grade.
Huh.
I think so, because I had made an absolute mess of my entire year in freshman English with him. And I figured I'm going to be held back, the total loss of face. But he was really cool that way. And his name was Michael Zlotua. I believe Mr. Z is still teaching up in Vermont where I grew up. And my niece had him as a teacher. I love the man, and I thank him for that. In terms of that, though, let me give you the real basic thing was I didn't essay any real serious writing for until about 1991, because we're looking at about an 8-year period where I was just trying to get through college. Mm-hmm. I was getting my broadcast career started and jobbing about and being a grunt in the industry for so many years. And I did that piece in the 90s, and it was fun. It was a stimulating little exercise, but I threw it aside and said, ah, I'm never going to be this good. And then you jump ahead to 2007, and that was when it happened. Here are the things. I had been in Altera for about a year, and I went over to my bandmate's house, my co-founder's house, a lady named Elizabeth Stein-Reed. She had 5 kids. I walked in one morning for rehearsal, and while she was getting ready, her kids were all in the living room in front of the TV watching the first episode of a Japanese anime called Fruits Basket, which has had a huge cult following over so many years. They have rebooted the show. There is a new manga or graphic novel series that has just gotten started. And for the first time in my life, here was anime that I was watching that wasn't all wild dystopian hack slash science fiction on one end, and it wasn't porn on the other end.
Right.
It was this middle ground, and here were these very interesting characters. And I just kind of fell into it, and I thought, wow, this is pretty cool. So I ended up buying the original series and watching it obsessively. And the main character, Aki, is loosely based on the lead of Fruits Basket, Toru Honda. But I had to make Aki very, very different and make her her own person, which eventually happened. So I start writing this sort of notes, and my interest in history and my interest in Japanese culture was another thing. I was very interested in certain elements of the culture, including anime and manga, but also just sort of the nation's own history, reading about its social history and that kind of thing. And I started to get that together, and then the title of the book, Searching for Roy Buchanan, just popped up as a title. I wasn't even thinking about Roy Buchanan. And all of a sudden, there it was. And I just wrote it down, and I thought, it's a good title, but how is this going to work? And then my mind just started going to work on it. And I probably hammered out the first draft in about a month. And it has had a very long trip till its release in 2019. It has to do with a lot of rewrites, a lot of going back to the story and realizing that it's terribly thin and it needs some different scenes. It needs a little more meat. I wrote some songs for the book. I just tried to very slowly make it a better story. And in the meantime, I was writing the sequel. I was writing the third book. I was writing the fourth book, the fifth book, the compendium. This was my imagination just going mad for about 3 years. And during this period, I had an agent. I grabbed hold of a young, aspiring agent who wanted to package the series kind of like as a Harry Potter sort of thing. I could see that it wasn't really, but I thought, okay, well, I kind of get where you're going. And I will say that she, for about 4 years, she did an honest job. She tried really hard to get interest in this. And it just would not happen. And in a way, that was a blessing in disguise because I continued to write other things during this period. And when I finally came back around and we parted ways and I looked at the book at that point, I said, oh boy, it's too thin. My writing style had changed. Everything about me had changed over those years. And I thought, okay, we're going to have a bash at this later, but it's not ready. So forget it. So in the meantime, I had just continued to write in this style, which is a very unusual style. Young adult just has always been a comfortable spot for me to write because I found myself sort of going back there and going back to my growing up years. And as I say, a lot of it was not fun, but it was no different than anyone who's ever experienced bullying, anyone who's ever experienced being the odd one out, who has ever experienced just not being like feeling like you belong there. And so I remember that there's a lot of my teenage years that I would consider to be rather dysfunctional and not normal or not typical. I am the youngest in a large family, however, there's about 11 years difference between my next sibling and me, so I was essentially an only child. I still had contact with my siblings, but I was really in the house alone, and I'd always been rather a loner. I'd always been rather a person who just wanted to do his own thing because it just felt better. So these are the kind of things I thought about, and I was thinking about the different elements of my life, and the question you probably have in mind, and a lot of people have asked me, is why did you set the story in Japan at that point? I did it really because I just wanted to try something different. And I wanted to see if I could put myself in a place I'd never been and didn't know an awful lot about, but had some sort of base understanding of the language, of the customs, that sort of thing, and thought, let's try this. Let's go do something different. And it started to really write itself, and the time travel, without giving it all away, brings Aki and her two brothers back in time and into different time frames. They are getting a musical education as they go back in time and meet people who might be famous, might not be famous, might never have been ever heard of. And for them, because of the way the storyline runs, it is partly for the music. It is a reconnection of themselves to something that is really important to them. It is also a reconnection with each of their own selves because of the issues that they as a family have had to face. So wait,
can I stop you there?
Yeah.
So is it about the healing power of music?
Yes, absolutely it is.
But it was amazing for me, who was a lot older than you, I think, reading this book because the references, first of all, Roy Buchanan, unless you're a person who loves the blues, you don't even know who Roy Buchanan is. And can we talk about him for a minute? Because he was an important guitar player that really pioneered the Stratocaster sound.
What do you mean the Telecaster?
Telecaster, excuse me, not the Stratocaster. Excuse me.
Yes, yeah. The ghost of Roy is going to come hit you with Nancy. But no, you know, it's the thing. I was never a huge fan of him, but I certainly had great respect for him. Now, as a guitar player myself, I felt the same way about a lot of great guitarists that I knew through the blues world, but so many people didn't really know and still don't know. And we don't know about what their connections are to the music. And I was a person who always kind of worked backwards with my musical whatevers. And Roy Buchanan was a guy that I'd come across, and I thought a lot of his guitar work was incredibly intricate, incredibly spacey.
Yep, yep.
And just he was wringing sounds out of a guitar that should not be. And I thought, this is, wow, he's going someplace that I've never imagined, really. And it was one of those things I respected, but when it came back to using him in the story, I thought, well, okay, I have got to figure out how this is going to work, because researching him was as much a part of that story, and I had a bit of luck with it. I had a couple of interviews that I read of him that were very interesting, in which he imparted his views about guitar and about how you really get started, how do you really develop, and that ended up in the book. It's also just the issues that he dealt with, and I can, you know, because there's no secret, he had some drug issues, some alcohol issues, and, you know, and sadly he passed away under very tragic circumstances in, I think, 1988, but he left behind an incredible amount of music, and I was very fortunate to meet a gentleman named Billy Price, who was the singer in his band for his second album and for a live album. This is back in the 70s. Billy is still around. He was living in the Pittsburgh area when I came across him a couple of years back, and he moved to Baltimore. And I interviewed him for an album he was putting out, and he was very kind in telling me about his interactions with Buchanan, what the man was really like, and how they bonded over music in certain ways. And he helped me find that I was kind of on the right track of what I was looking for, and he was very helpful in that way. And that really helped a lot. So the thing I tried to do was I wanted to be as close to real as I could be with some of these folks. And some of them were, without giving all the characters away, I did my best to try to make these people as real as I thought they would sound based on what I knew about them, based on what I read about them. And so that man's music becomes Aki's brother Hiro. It's sort of his inspiration. And there's, when you just, and I think it happened for me when I first heard Johnny Winter in the 1970s. When I first heard him play, having no idea who he was, you're 12 years old, and you hear that and you're like, what is that? And that was my first inspiration really right there. And I remembered that, so I just kind of threw that into the story.
You're listening to WISN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. My guest tonight is Tory Gates, award-winning writer. He's a radio broadcaster, hosting and producing music talk and sports programs. We're talking about his latest book, Searching for Roy Buchanan. I want to talk about writing for the young adult. I find that a very difficult genre. And although there's a lot of readers there, marketing it is really, really tough.
Well, it is a market right now that's pretty well fattened up by a lot of different very talented writers. And it's one of those things where right now the publishers do the same thing that they always do, and record labels do the same thing. When an artist gets hot, they go sign their version of the same thing. And At times, it can be a little daunting when you walk into a Barnes & Noble or like that.
Well, this is what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
You have all these titles, and most of them are not turned to face the audience. That's always the big deal, is to get your book so that it's looked at flat on. And there's just all these titles, and unless the buyer, the young adult, is familiar with them, they won't know to look through them. There's just so many titles, and the bindings are so thin.
Well, yeah, it's interesting because I always watch what people are doing over there. I do see a lot of young people that are looking, and it's like, yes, they look for the things that they know, but some are very curious, and I watch them sort of, they're pulling a book and they're looking it over, and they're not much different, I think, than adults if they're searching for something and they just don't know what it is. And they're looking it over and they're thinking, I'm just thinking to myself in the back of my mind, I want to just send a message to you. It's like, I have books you would like. I write better than that. But it's, and so you do what you can. Now, the thing with young adult that I admittedly don't think I'm doing anything in terms of breaking new ground, but I will tell you this. I think what I write, and I'm very fortunate that my parent publishing company, Sunbury Press Books, has been really cool about letting me write what I want and not giving me trouble about different elements, different scenes, different subject matters, because as someone once said, someone once criticized one of my books, and I don't think it was a bad thing. They said that a lot of these kids talk like adults. And I said, well, I remember my own life. I remember that you kind of have to talk up to adults, especially when you're the only kid around. And the other thing, too, is that I feel a lot of young adults really do look at things very seriously if they are aware enough of them. They are going to be as serious about it, and they're going to talk about it, and they're going to think about it in the very same way. And I also am not afraid to shy away from difficult subject matter. I am not afraid to shy away from the things that parents might be a little iffy about having their kids read. And I'm like, look, these things are not new. They are not unusual. They are real things.
Your first book dealt with, one of the characters suffers from bipolar.
Yes. Parasite Girls, the very long story short there was that was a story that I had written in 2010. And when it came, I came through a period of trying to find an agent, trying to find a publisher, no go. And my girlfriend at the time, Alice Pottinger, who was also my photographer for a lot of my pictures, Alice said, you have got to let one of your kids go. You got to kick one of your birds out of the nest and self-publish. Parasite Girls was easy because it only had four major characters and it was contemporary fiction. That story essentially was about an element of Japanese society called the parasite single, which is something that someone coined over there. And it was about young people in Japan not moving out and staying at home a lot longer. Now,
right,
in a Japanese society, most people either live alone or they live with their family. Roommates is not really a concept there. And I remember the guy's name. It was a fellow named Dr. Masahiro Yamada. He even wrote, I think, a book on this. And he took a rather dim view of young people who were out of college, in the workforce, and you would think, well, they should go get their own apartment. They should get married, have kids. But they... He noted a lot of women and some men were still staying at home with their family and still living there, and he sort of painted the broad brush that they're all sponging off their parents. Well, I thought that wasn't fair, and it just clicked with me with a story. So the basic story is...
Tori, we're going to run out of time. We have like 2 minutes left.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
No, never be sorry. It was great listening to you. But before we run out of time, I wanted to ask you about the Brown Posey Press Show.
Yes.
Talk to me about that.
Well, Brown Posey Press is the fiction imprint of Sunbury Press Books, which is based here in Pennsylvania where I live. And it started a few years ago. And so it's for young adult and contemporary fiction, which Sunbury Press has been branching out into. I host a Blog Talk Radio Network program for not only Brown Posey offers, but also for the for independent and self-published fiction authors.
Oh, nice.
And it's on the BookSpeak Network, which is part of Blog Talk Radio. And I do it every so often, and it's a lot of fun. It's very low-key. It's just authors sitting around talking about their books.
Is it a way to promote your book?
I think so, and it's for anyone that really would like an opportunity to just sit and talk about what they're doing. We talk about their books, the writing process, and I think it's just a great learning experience for anyone listening, but also for myself, because I learned something new from all of my guests.
Now, we've just have a few minutes left. Is this Searching for Rory Buchanan part of a series, then, that you've already written?
Already written. And
oh, my God.
Right.
So how many books are in the series? Or well, do you want to, or you don't give that out, because there should always be one more book.
Well, this is the way it's turned about. The sequel to Searching is going to be called Call It Love, and we hope to have it later this year or in early 2021. We're going to catch up with Aki and the gang a few months down the road, and it's going to be a little more serious, but I think it's going to be a very interesting story. The third book is tentatively called Shake Hands with the Devil, and I have stated that after the third book, we're going to stop. I need to let the characters grow up a little bit.
Yep.
And I've got to rewrite the rest of the series because there is so much more that has happened in these few years. I need to expand the time travel element. There's other elements that I want to explore. It's been what started all of this, and it's been a great deal of fun. And I've absolutely loved it. And I really think, you know, if it's a musical thing. Anybody loves music, you're going to love it. I think you're going to like a good, fun, rollicking story with it, with some elements of seriousness to it. And yes, the power of music, that is the thing. Healing, inspiration, all of it.
And you heard it here. My guest tonight is Tory Gates, award-winning writer, a radio broadcaster hosting and producing music, talk, and sports programs. And we've been talking about his latest book, the number one of a series, Searching for Roy Buchanan. Tory, it's been a pleasure.
Thank you so much, Mark. Really appreciate it.
You're listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. Good night.